talking with Don Brunke, the book Shadow Animals, How Animals We Fear Can Help Us Heal, Transform, and Awaken. She includes mythology, the source of origin for some of the animals, some of the myths that shape our lives. I opened, and I just had a dream recently about a big black cat coming into the house, and a large cat. The gist of it was, the cat is in the house. I opened, the very first page I opened to in Dawn's book is the Black Panther, and she explains it's not a species, but a cat, usually a jaguar or a leopard. In the dream, I've said that this cat is in the house. I relate that as help from a spirit companion. So we'll get into that because we do talk about our shadow animals and the animals that we've had encounters with, shamanic type encounters, in this interview.
I had an experience with some birds where I actually heard some birds outside my window. And when I say heard, you know, I mean I heard their thoughts in my head. And they were qualitatively different than my own thoughts. So I realized, you know, because I had been talking, interviewing with a lot of animal communicators, that that's what this was. So I was really kind of self-taught, or taught by animals, you could say.
Dawn Brunke is an animal communicator. She's led workshops and offered animal consultations for more than two decades. Books, Animal Voices, Animal Wisdom Tarot, Shapeshifting with Our Animal Companions, Dreaming with Polar Bears, and Awakening the Ancient Power of Snake. She has a wonderful endorsement from Robert Moss, a spirited and original contribution to shadow work, showing us how our buried histories and childhood fears take shape in our feelings and phobias around animals. She lives in Alaska. Website, animalvoices.net. Talking with Dawn Brunke, the book is Shadow Animals, but that's just like the tip of the iceberg, because when you go to her website, you find out that there's a whole lot more about animal communicating, the key to spirit animals, voices, animal guides, animal teachings, cool one, Dreaming with Polar Bears, and Awakening the Ancient Power of the Snake. So there's a whole lot here to work with. And Dawn, when you were a kid, did you already have this connection with animals?
I didn't necessarily have this connection with animals. No, I mean, I always loved animals. I was a dog person, so I always wanted to be with dogs. But no, this was something that came later for me, this ability to, you know, connect and talk with animals.
Well, it's a shamanic view, citing from the interview you did with Robert Moss, being a polar bear. I thought that was also a good way to kind of introduce your different view of being with animals and interpreting what animal communication might mean.
Sure. Well, that particular experience came after a long, you know, connection with animals. I kind of was introduced to animal communication via some interviews I did, more as a journalist. I had an experience with some birds where I actually heard some birds outside my window. And when I say heard, you know, I mean I heard their thoughts in my head, and they were qualitatively different than my own thoughts. So I realized, you know, because I had been talking, interviewing with a lot of animal communicators, that that's what this was. So I was really kind of self-taught, or taught by animals, you could say. I also have a lot of experience with dreams. I love dreaming. I'm, you know, an avid dream recorder and working with my dreams and doing lucid dreams. So the experience you refer to was, it came after a dream I had actually of being on an airplane and being given a note that said dreaming with polar bears. And it was kind of an invitation. And I thought, what is this? There was a sense that I could either do this or not. There was no right or wrong attached to it. It was just, here's a possibility. Do you want to do this? And I decided, yes, I do want to do that. So over a period of about, I would say, 6 months, I had these little tiny dreams where I was walking beside a polar bear in the Arctic. The polar bear was always to my left. He was kind of like shoulder high. And it was very much about movement, about walking. You know, there's a kind of a sway. There's a particular way that polar bears walk. And I was just doing that in the dream. And then I would wake up. And it was one of those dreams that I didn't really know what it meant. It felt like, I called it a seed dream, where it was just this kind of energy of walking with a polar bear. So after a number of months, I would say probably 6 to 8, I have this dream where, again, I'm walking with the polar bear in the dream. And I hear our feet, you know, crunch the ice. And we're in the Arctic, and we're moving. And I look over, and I realize, oh, this is a dream. I'm in a lucid dream. I'm awake in the dream. And I looked over at the polar bear, and it turned its head and it looked at me. Polar bears have in the dream, it had a huge head, right? I mean, they do normally, but it was just a great big bear. It turned its head to me. And for a moment, I was in the bear's head seeing me in the dream, and I knew that the bear was in my body seeing itself. And there was this intense connection. I say intense meaning deep. Huh? It was a deep, heartfelt connection with this polar bear. And when I woke from the dream, I realized, this is what it means dreaming with polar bears. And that led to another long, probably a year-long study of dreaming with the polar bears, actually being connected to what I call the Polar Bear Council, which was kind of a group of spirit polar bears. And this particular bear, which, you know, in my mind was actually a living bear living in the Arctic and was capable of connecting to a living human in Alaska via dreams. And so that's kind of how that book and that story unfolded.
I like the writings you have on your site as well, the articles that you've included. And when you mentioned, you know, interviewing and writing stories, well, that is, you do that so well. Teachings of the Earth Council, and there's other how to communicate with animals. For anyone who's interested in doing this, you offer a plethora of opportunities to connect in the way that might work best for them, because we all hear differently. I want to go back to that. You heard birds and what they were thinking.
Well, again, this was very early. I mean, basically, I knew that there are people called animal communicators. I had been interviewing them. Again, this is 20 years ago, right? So I'm kind of new to the concept. And I was typing at my computer, and I saw some birds come to the, I have an office window with a bush outside, kind of a bushy tree. And a number of birds came, and I don't know why I did it, but this is something I wouldn't do. But I was in such kind of a you know, when I'm writing, you're in a little bit of a trance state. You know, you're focused on your writing. It was flowing. I put my hands in my heart, and I walked to the window, and I said, hello, little birds. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I mean, again, not something I would do, but I heard them in my head, and they were speaking to me. And it was a very short interchange, something like, you know, we're very quick. We send you greetings. It was just very pleasant. Again, it was nothing I was thinking of. I was very clear that I wasn't projecting this because, again, the thought of that or the energy of that was, it was very qualitatively different from my own thought.
Yeah.
So it felt very from out there, right? Mm-hmm. And it did weird me out a little. I mean, I you know, kind of cut it short. It took me a couple weeks kind of to come to terms with, like, wow, we can actually talk to animals, you know, and that really fascinated me. If we can talk to animals, what would they tell us? What would they want to know, you know? And that then, you know, kind of became the focus of the second part of that first book, Animal Voices, because I interviewed a lot of communicators and, you know, wanted their opinions. But then when it happened to me, it took on a new flavor, huh?
Yes.
When something happens to you, you know it in another way, in a deeper way. And so I was able to speak or write, you know, in the book in kind of a deeper way about that. That was my first experience.
When you were a kid, the multiverse, you weren't a foreigner to this concept that we are more than the physical, that there's more out there. Mm-hmm. So in your words, mm-hmm. how did that feel?
In my family growing up, I was called the weird one. You know, I was always interested in dreams, and I couldn't understand why nobody else was so excited about, you know, these amazing stories we tell ourselves at night. And as a young child, even as young as kindergarten, I had just amazing dreams where I would, in fact, there was one about walking with a polar bear. I remember, I'll just share one to give you an example of how this works, but I woke up in the middle of the night, and my fingers were sparkling, and I was kind of, I think I was dreaming, you know, my fingers had like little sparkles out of them. And a voice in the dream told me to go to my closet. And if I was willing to open the closet door, I would get, something very special would be there. And the closet door was always a scary place for me. But I was able in the dream to get up to open the closet door, and out came a polar bear. And we walked around my room. I remember several times it was kind of, again, about that movement, the polar bear's thinking and movement. And then, how to say it, a light road opened up that went through my window up into the sky, and we went together and we went to the Arctic. And we had a full experience there. In some ways, and I brought that up in my polar bear book because I felt like that was an introduction to this multiverse, to these, you know, alternate worlds, They can be dream worlds. They can be imaginal worlds. And they're all connected in some way, huh? You know, it would be a great book if somebody would map that out and show us how they're all connected.
Yeah. I think we're each supposed to do that ourselves, you know, and that's what you're doing. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I'm so interested in dreams. And, you know, in some ways, connecting with animals is the same way, because you're opening yourself to a different universe, if you will, a different world in which animals and humans can communicate.
I've had my own experiences. One point, I was just in a car driving along and, you know, doing that reverie. Somebody else is driving and I'm on the passenger side. I'm looking out the window and I see the hawk fly, and the hawk's flying pretty much even with the car and lands on a fence post. And the moment I see the hawk come maybe, you know, 3 feet from that fence post, I'm in the hawk's body and feel myself pull up to land on the fence post. And it was amazing, because I was very much in two places at once and feeling the momentum of pushing myself forward as I'm flying and then stopping to gather myself and that in that space. And I've seen myself in the body of other animals. So for me, I like what you're doing, because it speaks to how we are not just limited to one form of consciousness, that our consciousness is multidimensional, and we can transcend being a physical person with all these, whatever I have, duties, roles, responsibilities, and understanding, well, there's a greater responsibility to the planet and the other beings that we share this earth with. And when you're talking about your dreaming and being connected in that way, then offering these kinds of experiences gives people, I think, a chance to get outside the box and say, well, what can I experience? What has happened to me that maybe I discounted? And gosh, there's more to that. And maybe I'm more curious to find out more. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I totally agree with you, you know, and I always think that, you know, things are as open as we are, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, conventional society tries to kind of, you know, put us all in a little box. And so when you're ready to see that and step outside of the box, yeah, there's amazing experiences and connections, you know. And I think in my feeling is the universe is good natured. And as soon as we put our attention on something that interests us, we see these connections, these stepping stones, these signs or whispers, you know, from the universe helping us and supporting us on our journey to awaken.
In the book Shadow Animals, there's a story. There are several animals you've chosen, and I'll get to that in just a minute. But there's a story, a woman who lost her pet rat, the love letter that she gives her rat. It's beautiful. That's what got me.
She was a performance artist, and she wrote a love note to her little rat that accompanied her. She was an artistic performance artist, right? So she would kind of do these interesting experiential things. I think she was from New York and from the art world. And the rat Tatty Waddles would accompany her to parties and would, I think in a way what they were doing was they were helping to educate people about rats, because rats are, you know, as you referenced, they're a really intense shadow animal. They're an animal that people are mostly uncomfortable with and afraid of to some extent. And so Rachel, I can't remember her last name right now, but she was doing a lot to help people. Not only to, you know, open up in an inspirational way, in an imaginal way, but also to realize that rats are, they can be our friends, they can be our teachers, they can be our guides.
If you want to follow along in the book, it's on page 64 and 65. Rachel, her last name's Rosenthal. Well, I did mean to put you on the spot, but with that, it, as you're dealing with shadow animals and coming to this, that, idea that, well, some of these animals that other people are deathly afraid of are best friends for other people. And that's when, you know, people have snakes as pets, or they have spiders as pets. And that's just a whole different reality. And why do we have the fear that we have? What made you decide to deal with this aspect?
Well, it actually started with snake. The book I wrote before this was called Awakening the Ancient Power of Snakes. And that book was inspired by a dream I had. It was on the winter solstice a number of years ago, and I was having extreme back spasm pain. I was in bed. My daughter and my husband were putting up the Christmas tree, and I was just, like, moaning in bed. I asked myself at one point, what do I need to know? And this ancient archetypal snake, this image of this snake came into my head. And the snake told me it had lost its tail. And that began a long dream. I won't go into all of it here because it was quite involved. But the gist of it was, when snake told me it had lost its tail, it's T-A-L-E, right? It's T-A-I-L. It had also lost its tail, it's T-A-L-E, its story, its connection to humans. The dream was so powerful for me, it spoke to me at such a deep level that I just started that very day to research snakes, to learn about snakes, talk to people about snakes. I realized very quickly this was going to be a book about snake and about how we as humans had lost our connection to this amazing animal that in ancient days, you know, was an advisor to royalty, a protector of gods and goddesses. We had a whole different attitude towards snakes thousands of years ago than as we do now. And I did end up with living with two snakes for a while and learned about snakes. You know, that just, it brought home to me that here is a shadow animal. Most people are very uncomfortable around snakes. That is so powerful and that can help us in so many ways. And so when I finished that book, I had the idea that I really wanted to write about other shadow animals and help people to really see their own shadow. So kind of the premise of the book is that by better understanding the animals, you know, that we fear or dislike, the more we can learn about what we unconsciously fear or dislike in ourselves.
Did the pain go away when you started, when you addressed that and followed through?
Yeah.
To me, that's a root chakra. I mean, it's because you know, the back spasms and the snake, and there you are grounding with the root chakra. And so I was hoping that you were going to say yes, because it seemed to me that's what it indicated.
Well, you know, and the sacral chakra too. I mean, Kundalini was definitely an important aspect to me. Kundalini is kind of that coiled serpent that sleeps at the base of the spine in the sacral area, you know, meaning sacred. It's a sacred energy that sits there for us until we're ready to awaken. So yeah, that my back issues were very much connected with that.
My snake dream was in being in a boxing ring, and I walk up into the ring. This is like a Twilight Zone episode. There's nobody, I can't see an audience. I can't see, it's all dark, except this ring is lit up. And there's this snake the size of the Harry Potter spider. Okay, it's a giant. It's probably 5 feet wide, or you know, four and a half, 5 feet wide, and it towered above me, maybe so 7 feet. And it's looking at me and speaking to me and said, "Are you afraid of me?" And I'm like, "No, I like snakes. What's wrong with you?" I was just completely baffled why this snake would be so aggressive and adversarial. And I don't know why I'm in the boxing ring. And it said, "You will be." And I thought, okay, so that was a power trip. All right. Seeing what if I had a sense of my own power with the snake, who is to me a teacher. And so the wisdom is all there with the snake when you identify that the snake is a friend and not an adversary. But the snake, for me, that was a test of, was I going to fall for the bait of, you know, that bravado of, if I make myself look really, really big and strong, you're gonna quiver in your boots and get out of the ring. And no, I didn't leave the ring. I stood there and looked at him like, what the heck are you doing? So I just thought I would throw that. I loved seeing the snake is part of this dark forces, the shadow animals that actually, I think, ask us to step up to the plate.
I think you're right. I think, you know, we can talk about animal teachers in general. I mean, animals are, you know, since ancient times have been guides and supporters and inspirational and helpers, aids. Shadow animals, I think, you know, we tend not to look at, and yet they're very special, powerful animal teachers that ask us to look at our fear, to look at what we're uncomfortable with, what frightens us, what scares us, what do we want to run away from, huh? So in that way, they direct us to face our shadow, which is all those aspects of self we really don't want to deal with. So we kind of, you know, step into the basement of our being. So the shadow animals are the ones that help us go down into the basement and clear things out. That's intense work, huh?
Yes. You do a good job, I think, with the spider element. There's a whole lot going to this, and there are also exercises. So if you have a fear of a specific element, spider, horse, dog, rat, cat, what bat, you know. This one happens to have more to it in working out through a diagram and through elements that say, what is this about? And I know somebody who has a deathly fear of spiders, and she wants to go for the most toxic thing she can to kill them. I'm thinking, okay, that's there's a work in progress.
But that's Western society in general, right? You know, like, how do we deal with anything? Let's go to war. Let's kill it. Let's cut it out. You know, it's not a willingness to, and we're very fast in our society. So I think what this book suggests is, you know, there's something very helpful about being willing to sit with what you're uncomfortable with and take your time.
Dawn Brunke lives in Alaska. We're going to have a cameo a little later from one of the locals. Back with Dawn Brunke, dealing with shadow animals. Her hope.
A lot of my book, Shadow Animals, talks about shifting the fear to fascination.
And now we get back into the superstars of shadow work with animals for some, and just nightmares for others.
I was bitten by a brown recluse. When I got bit, it was just like a little tiny pinprick. And then about 3 or 4 days later, there's this swelling at the back of my knee, and I'm having to go figure out what it is and confirmed. And what they want to do is take it out of your body. And I knew what I needed to do was detox, because it puts the poison in you. And unless you get rid of that or neutralize it, it's going to continue. At that time, I had a vision, and the vision, I'm in a room with again, here's another giant spider story. The spider's huge, and I have a white thing that's about the size of a basketball in my hands, and I know this is the egg. It isn't mine. It belongs to her. So I hand the egg over to this giant spider. The guides who are with me say, and they ask, why did you do that? I said, well, because it was hers. And they said, well, you know, you were hurt. I said, that had nothing to do with her. This is her egg. It doesn't belong to me. And I'm not blaming the spider. It was me. And then they said, you will have no more issues with spiders. And it healed. It took about a year, but it was a lesson of a lot. I learned a lot through that. I won't go into more, but the things here that when we are confronted with things that can be frightening and dangerous, that there's another way to deal with healing that comes with that if we're willing to do the work.
If we're willing to do the work, I agree with you. And, you know, sometimes, and this is just kind of a bookend to one of your other dreams, sometimes I think we're asked to also respect our own boundaries and our own borders. I had one dream. I can't remember if I shared it in this book or not, but it was a dream of going to a kind of a, you know, a little healer's cabin in the woods. And she gives me this huge snake and suggests I go sit on the chaise lounge. So I'm sitting with a snake, and the snake is very nice, and it's just kind of going around my body. And then it wants to go around my neck. And I remember the dream. I said, no, I wasn't frightened, but I remember having just very strong feelings. Nope, you're not going around my neck. I don't know this snake. I don't know this woman, right?
Yeah.
And when I woke up, I did feel like I had passed the test of, you know, we have to be careful, right?
Yes.
In our lives as well, and respect our own boundaries. You know, we don't necessarily have to, we can respect snake without being its best friend or without necessarily, you know, cuddling up to a snake in bed or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. That's discernment. Yeah. Discernment. Yeah. Some of that is there's a belief that to show no fear, you have to ignore some of those safety nets. And I think, like you said, that was a test of, do you have boundaries? What is, do you understand this might be a dream, but it's also another part of reality? And how easy are you to manipulate in this reality? And that's where it goes back to the multiverse. There's so many dimensions of existence and being that we have yet, I think, to even get, you know, the tip of the iceberg with understanding how many levels of reality there are.
Right. I agree completely. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
and also, but just going back to fear for one second, you know, I don't think, you know, again, in Western society, I don't mean to put Western society down, but I'm just going to say we have a thing about this bravado about, oh, you know, don't show your fear, you know, fake it till you make it, that kind of energy, which really doesn't serve us well. I think what I'm speaking of isn't necessarily, or both of us are speaking of, it's not to say that you don't have fear, it's to face your fear, huh?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's appropriate to say, I'm afraid. And yet I'm not going to run away from this. I'm going to sit here or stand here and look at what this is and move through it. So, and I think as soon as you move into that positioning, it's different, you know, and again, the universe supports us when we're willing to look at things like that and move through them and not make up stories about ourselves or have false bravado about things like that.
Well, I think some of that's arrogance, you know, that sense of, well, I can do anything until I can't.
Right.
And that's called the universe has boundaries too, kiddo.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. There's nightmare. I like the way you split that, the nightmare. And I thought, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Talk about that, how that element fits in with the shadow and fear.
I'm always interested in words and the origin of words. I have a big etymological dictionary. So I was thinking when I did this, I wanted to do a chapter on horses. And I was thinking, oh, nightmare, you know? And I realized, the origin of the word, it's not connected. A nightmare isn't necessarily about a horse. But I play with that because I think words can like that invite us in. And so that chapter is about, it's about horses to some degree, but it's also about our nightmares and our dreams and how the two are similar in a way. You know, when you have a horse that's just running so fast and we can get, kind of the nightmare horse, which is one that runs away with us.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't let your horses run away from you, right? Is that the saying, I think? So there's something connected there about, again, about pacing and about being with horse. I think horse is an amazing teacher that asks us to align with ourselves. You know, that's why horse is such a great helper to humanity with connecting with children or with emotionally disturbed people who are emotionally, you know, people who need help emotionally. There's something about connecting with a horse that offers a huge benefit in healing to us. Oh, there's just so much here. I mean, I could talk about horse the whole time, but that's kind of the gist of it, how that chapter started out for me and how I played with horse. Horse is an amazing, horses just figure so prominently in myth and legend, don't they, in so many different ways. And so that was a fascinating aspect to me as well. Our myths are kind of like our communal dreams. So there's something really delicious to me about going back and looking at legends and seeing, you know, how a group of people at that point in time came up with this story or this collective dream about an animal or about a situation. And you know, I almost always find that there's some something to be learned from that, huh?
Yes. Yes. And to me, the horse, there's a very powerful heart energy that goes with being with a horse. Yeah. And so that's therapeutic. And that is why their connection with people who might have disabilities or other kinds of emotional issues are encouraged and supported in dealing and having some kind of connection with horses, because there is that automatic, no words needed, healing element that is present.
Yeah, definitely. And there's something about, I think, just again, alignment. I think horses are very sensitive to emotion and can help us kind of settle in to our center and help us align in that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, there's something about finding one's center with a horse that's very powerful.
Who was your favorite shadow animal to deal with in this? Did something happen as a result of dealing with that animal?
Oh, that's good. Well, I mean, I knew I was going to have a chapter on snake because snake is probably one of my favorites. I love the chapter on bats and how bats. You know, what I was also interested is I included a chapter on cats and dogs. And people would be like, well, how are they shadow animals? But there are shadow aspects to those animals.
Yes, there are.
So there was that. Those were both really fun chapters for me to do. I think also Scapegoat, the goats, and how shall we project so much on goats and how you know, I have a whole big long story about how Pan, one of the original nature gods, transformed into the devil, because when we think of the devil in the traditional way, you have horns and cloven hoofs, and so there's a lot there, I think, in that goat chapter about how we deal with shadow. And I'll just tell a real quick little story, which is a lighter one, but you know, the notion of scapegoat, it comes from an actual goat. And from ancient Babylonia, this is an ancient tradition where people would call it small villages would heap their collective sins onto a goat, a literal physical goat. Mm. And sometimes that goat would have red ribbons tied around its horn or a silver necklace, and it would be run out into the wilderness. Sorry about that, my dog. He's a moose out there.
A moose.
Anyway, that goat would be led out to the wilderness, and, you know, the notion was then everybody would be absolved of their sins, which to me was like, whoa, this is how you're dealing with shadow? You're going to put it on a goat and put it out in the wilderness and try to forget about it? I mean, it's the same as how shadow gets started in the first place, which is we push it into the basement of our being. We want it to be away. So it's not really a resolution of shadow. It's a perpetuation of shadow.
Okay, so you're in Alaska. Is there really a moose outside?
Yeah, there were two big ones this morning. Right. Because our snow is so deep. I was telling you before, we have about 25 inches of snow or so. And so the moose are out looking for, tender shoots to eat of trees and bushes. Yep, they come right through the neighborhood.
Okay, tell your dog thank you for the ambiance, okay? Because that is cool. We're talking animals and the moose shows up. There's a message in that, all right?
There's always a message, right?
Yes.
I mean, anything that happens, there's a message if you're willing to sit with it and look at it, yep.
Oh, I didn't see moose in the book. Is there a moose in there? Did I overlook?
Not in this book, no.
Okay, I was looking at frog and the frog meditation because, you know, you go back to the, you know, the mythology of the prince and the frog and the princess.
Oh, right.
So how does that work?
Yeah. How does the meditation work?
First, since I opened a frog, to give a little background on frog here because there's a whole lot to do with frog.
I talked about this. I called the chapter Metamorphosis. So it's much about... how to say this? You know, frogs are a lot about transformation, huh? They move from tadpoles to frogs. And I think there's something a little creepy about that for a lot of people. And when you look at the mythology of frogs, you know, frogs were often associated with the sinister, you know, princes were turned into frogs with a curse. And there was one of the plagues of ancient Egypt was the frogs coming up. And, so there's a lot about that, and I want to say about frog. There's a magic to frog, I think. When we look at transformation, there's a magic of it that moves away from that idea that frogs are unclean spirits or somehow scary to, again, it's about facing your fear, huh? And how frogs can help us move through the changes that we naturally go through, just through aging, but also our evolutionary changes and stages of awakening. And can help us move or jump or leap, huh?
Yes.
From kind of problematic situations we may be in to larger ways of seeing things where we're lightened up of our burden and we move in a kind of graceful way, or sometimes with a leap of faith even, huh? To seeing things in a new way, and that changes us in some way, in some deep way. Yeah, and that's really what that whole story about the princess and the frog is all about, you know? It's about a princess, the very short version is she's out and with, you know, this is an entitled princess, right? She has a golden ball, mm-hmm. and she's playing with it, and it falls down a well, and a voice comes up from the well, and it's the frog, and the frog offers to return the golden ball to her, the orb, if she's willing to let it sit with her, eat with her, and be in her bedchamber at night and just be with her as a friend, right? And the princess agrees, but she's kind of a willful girl and she runs away and she doesn't honor the thing. And, you know, the frog shows up at the castle and the king is kind of the princess's moral compass, huh, and tells her, no, you have to honor your promises. And so she begrudgingly, she allows that to happen to the frog to eat with her. And that evening, the frog, you know, is in her bedchamber and, there's a long story and there's different myths that end in different ways, but the princess, you know, kind of in our newer version, kisses the frog and becomes the prince. And there's something much about the kiss transforming the curse from the ancient, you know, the witch that cursed the prince and turn him into a frog into him becoming that way, but back into a prince. So there's a long adventure of metamorphosis there in many different ways.
I like your dream, the dream that you had where the frog is, you know, a giant frog.
Oh, the giant frog. That was an interesting one. Yeah. Yeah. Again, that's about facing your fear, too. I was in a mall and I saw some frogs in a little a pond. I remember I have a frog in my pocket. So I put the frog in the pond and then I come back and the frogs are enormous. They're huge. They're the size of dinner plates. And one steps out of the pond and it becomes kind of a man frog. And it walks towards me, and I'm very frightened. I start to run away, and then I think, oh, how silly am I running away from a frog, right? Mm-hmm. So I turn back and I stand, and that frog opens its mouth very wide. It comes very close to me, and I suddenly feel surprising fondness for the frog, huh? And he tells me, thank you. And I think that was a very powerful dream for me because, you know, and I think that is what happens with our shadow animals when we're willing to turn and face them and stand before them. They do say thank you because their lives are entwined with ours in some ways, and they're working to help us to face our fears and to wake up to larger experiences of who we are, who we all are.
I love that one because of the way that it turns from you being questioning, what the heck am I running for? And yet when he comes up, this is a giant man-sized frog with a big mouth. You know, you're thinking, dinner. So you stand there, and then the frog does that, where you've basically acknowledged the frog as an equal in some way and not threatening. Yeah. And so you've seen the frog for being a frog. And I just thought, I love that because there it is. There's, these, again, a giant animal who makes it larger than life for us to face this, and then however we take it is up to us. You chose to do that. Somebody else might choose differently, but that's what I think the power is of learning what our response would be, and then maybe transcending what the negative element, the fear, and taking it to appreciation when you felt that sense of just warmth, that, you know, that warmth of, oh, okay.
Yeah. So true. Appreciation is key, isn't it? If we can shift our, a lot of my book, Shadow Animals, talks about shifting the fear to fascination. And as soon as we can do that, as soon as we can become curious about a large man-sized frog, we're facing our fear, and we're able to transform and shift and move into other ways of seeing the world and seeing ourselves and being. Huh?
At some point, I do believe, and my own experiences, I've had this where I've been in the body of an animal, whether it was a cat, at one point a tiger, another point an eagle, and then the hawk, these different animals, and having, you know, seeing your body with their elements, like with the talons, mm-hmm. and going, wow, this is cool. Mm-hmm. But also a limited mobility when you're in that form, that you're, you know, transforming from a human element. And I think that it teaches us so much, that there's so much more to learn about these other beings, that if we don't take the time, I think we're missing out. And so offering this from a point of fear gives people a chance to, oh, well, yeah, maybe I need to identify with that to appreciate more of what might be possible with those elements and those aspects.
I so agree. I mean, that was the big takeaway of my first book, Animal Voices, where I realized the way that we as humans see the world is really not the only way the world can be experienced. All you have to do is become, like you say, an eagle, a cat, a whale, and experience the world in that way. And you realize, whoa, there's so much more here than I ever imagined, right?
Yes. And so with the book, Shadow Animals, that's the most recent one, and how animals we fear can help us heal, transform, and awaken. Obviously, you work with animals. Why do you think the moose showed up today? What's next?
Well, the moose have been showing up. That's we just have had them a lot lately because of the big amount of snow we've had. And we have, my husband made some clearings so that the moose can actually eat off of some of the bushes here. And moose have a hard time. Moose are incredibly hardy animals. They're amazing. You think of them as kind of ungainly, but they can actually run quite fast, and they can move really well in snow. So there's something to appreciate, I think, in moose about facing adversity and getting through things to get what you need. How about that? How about we invoke that aspect of moose?
Yeah. One more question that has nothing to do with your book. There have been Bigfoot sightings in Alaska. Have you heard of any Bigfoot stories or Sasquatch stories?
I haven't. You know, I've always been interested by, and I did write about in one of my books about the Yeti. That's kind of more my interest on that, which is kind of associated with the Bigfoot. It's more of an Eastern connection. But I'm always fascinated by it. I personally have not met any. I'm definitely open to, I love hearing stories of what people have experienced. But I'm sorry, I don't have a great Bigfoot story to share with you.
I'm putting that on your list.
Okay.
The other shadow elements that are not necessarily physical shadow elements, but the other monsters in the dark. I don't have a negative. I have a good experience. And so that's why I was curious, since you're in Alaska and you are out in the wilds, that might be, with a moose showing up, there's another other element that might somehow make its presence known. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
No, this has been a really lively discussion. You know, just that if people want to know more, they can go to my website at animalvoices.net. I guess I could say also just that I do animal communication sessions, which is an opportunity for you to connect with your animal and kind of learn what's going on with them. And I also do tarot readings. I did, one of my books was a tarot deck with a little guidebook. So I love doing tarot, which is a kind of dreaming in a way, kind of an active dreaming. And I don't yet offer dream sessions, but I don't know if I will or not, because there's so many good dream teachers out there. But that's just an area that I'm very fascinated with and engaged with.
Your animal wisdom tarot, this is the water, are the beavers here with the little snail shells?
Yeah, the otters, I think, are the ones with the shells. It's basically an animal-inspired tarot deck, so it kind of follows the traditional Rider-Waite, but has an animal twist to it.
Yeah, this looks like fun. Okay, before your dog goes out there and really annoys the moose, let's intercede here, okay? Diversion. Mom is being called. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Yes. Well, I had a great time talking with you, so thank you as well.
So there you have it. Greetings from Alaska and the moose cameo to seal the deal. Going back to my cat is in the house. And Dawn's interpretation in her book, Black Panther, Follow the Mystery. Links are in the description for the show. I've also included one relating to heart energy with the horse, how horses heal us emotionally, and there's tangible evidence to back that up. Thanks for listening.